It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I hope you enjoy the show this morning and that you have a great week coming up in the outdoors. It's certainly in the Midwest been a rainy one. I'm going to start off this morning talking about something that's going to happen tonight. Of course, that's the second presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And my question, rhetorical one, because we've asked it before, is when are they going to start talking about natural resources, the outdoors, the environment, the future of conservation in America? We're now into the final home stretch, and I really don't think there are many people in America who know where either candidate would take us when it comes to the future of hunting and fishing, natural resource management, the management of all of how we manage conservation, how we manage our national parks, how we manage our national wildlife refuges. This is a huge question. There are over 50 million of us in America that hunt and fish. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. But aside from the fact that it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, it represents what kind of a future we're going to have in land management in America, what kind of a future we're going to have in our outdoor heritage. And it's well known now that both of Donald Trump's sons love to hunt. They've been on television shows hunting for years. This is not a newly acquired taste. But it's not known what Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump would actually do if they became president of the United States concerning the funding of our natural resources and the management of our wildlife. One of the things that's happened in the last 8 years, which has been of a terrific negative consequence to the future of our national wildlife refuges, is the shifting away of agriculture on our national wildlife refuges. The national wildlife refuges, particularly the Mississippi Flyway, as well as the Pacific Flyway, were set up to provide food for wildlife and waterfowl, particularly waterfowl, because that was the focus of the National Wildlife Refuge System. So to provide food for birds. Under the Obama administration, there has been a very strong, decided shift away from the planting of food crops for wildlife to the natural foods that would ordinarily just grow, prairie grasses and trees and all those things, which have nothing to do with providing the high carbohydrates and food energy that we need for feeding waterfowl and deer and turkey and all of the food sources that are required to feed what has become the sanctuary for wildlife. So we've actually had, over the past 8 years, a move away from what would have been solid wildlife management of our national wildlife system to a system where we are depending on more and more on private lands, which adjoin or nearby refuges, to feed wildlife, which was never the idea. So in the debate tonight, it would be great if someone in the town hall, maybe one of us can just go and be a planted, question in the town hall. Someone stood up and said, in your administration, what are you going to do to advance fish and wildlife habitat and management in America? Watch a blank look come across their faces, because neither one of them have talked about it whatsoever to this date. But that is a big part of what needs to take place in wildlife management. The other thing is, of course, what's going to happen with our ability to be unrestricted in hunting through the acquisition of firearms? This is not a Second Amendment question. This is a question for those of us who are law-abiding as citizens who want to be able to go hunting and target shooting unfettered by the colossal amount of paperwork that is coming our way and the increasing regulations. Again, we don't know where either candidate stands on the lawful use of firearms for hunting. They may support it, they may not, but there have not been any open statements about that. And then lastly, I think when it comes to the debate tonight, if anyone asks a question about natural resource management, what's going on with our fisheries and our marine system? Under the Obama administration, we have set aside huge amounts of land that are now marine reserves where you cannot fish, you cannot do anything, you can't dive, you have to stay out of these areas. And is that based upon science or is that based upon politics? The answer is it has not been discussed. These big marine reserves are largely being done without the input of the scientific community and without the input of the recreational community. And is that trend going to continue? But the bottom line is, we're about to have a president of the United States who has spent less time, either candidate, who has spent less time, or I suppose we have a libertarian candidate, who has spent less time talking about the future of our outdoor recreation and land management than any candidate, presidential candidate, that I think anybody can remember. It's not as though it's not important. It's just because they have not been pressed on this, and neither one has a personal abiding interest in the future of hunting and fishing in America. As I said at the beginning, maybe if Donald Trump wins, his son's strong advocacy of hunting and their lifelong passion for it will rub off. But at the top, there's not been a discussion. Maybe tonight in a town hall forum, there'll be half the questions will be about the future of natural resource management and the outdoors. I doubt it. But for those of us who really care, it's time we know what our future is going to look like and how we're going to be able to ensure that our kids are going to have access to the kinds of things that we have, and also that we're going to be able to manage our resources in a way that's going to make not only the environment better, but the habitat better, and the future of hunting and fishing and land management and wildlife species management better. And we haven't even gotten to our national parks, which are just falling apart before our eyes, and what's going to take place there, and can we have another civilian conservation corps? Can we greatly expand, as we've talked on this show, about the ability of individuals to volunteer to help clean up our national parks, to help rebuild our national parks? This whole nation, a lot of it's been built on volunteerism. Today, we've stifled that through regulations and a lot of labor contracts that restrict our ability to volunteer and to help rebuild or even build our national parks. Is that going to change? Are we going to have a civilian conservation corps offering the opportunity for millions of individuals who want to find work to go work in our national parks? One of the strong things that did come out of the Roosevelt administration after the Depression, as controversial as it was at the time, was the CCC. Are we going to have that kind of an effort again, which so many of us feel in the outdoor community and in who work in our national parks feel would be just fabulous? Are we going to even have any interest in that, or is it just going to be more labor contracts and more restrictions so that we can't volunteer in America? Those are the kinds of things that would be great to talk about tonight. Hopefully some of them would be spoken about. Moving from the debate to another kind of debate, it's that what is taking place with the reintroduction of wolves into the West and how it is impacting not only our pocketbooks, but how elk behave. Throughout the West, as wolves have expanded their range, they have forced game into the more populated areas. And in Idaho right now, in Wyoming, and parts of Utah, record numbers of elk have moved into areas where people live. And the reason is because it's very dangerous for them to live up in the mountains or in remote areas where wolves have really taken a foothold. So the consequence of wolves has been to change the behavior, particularly elk, but also deer, and force them into areas where there's more conflict with humans. That means more car accidents. That means, unfortunately, more fatalities for wildlife. And if you hit an elk with a car, it is a very serious event for humans as well. The third part of it is what is being caused with elk coming in and eating agricultural crops, and in the winter eating hay stacks, the big stacks of hay that are kept for cattle. And the expense now is that ranchers and farmers throughout the West, where there are elk present with wolves, are demanding that we, the taxpayers, pay for building fences around their feedlots to keep the elk out so that they can feed their cattle rather than feeding the elk. And it seems to me that this is not something the taxpayers of the United States should be paying for, is to putting up high fences around private cattle operations to keep wildlife out. But it is a consequence of what's taken place with the reintroduction of wolves and how they have caused animals, if they want to survive, to adapt or they're going to get eaten. So in the West right now, there is a real controversy brewing over who's going to pay for the cost of elk moving into more populated areas, and elk eat a lot of food. Is it going to be ranchers and farmers having to put up high fences themselves, or is it going to be the states having to put up defenses for them, being paid for by the U.S. taxpayers. So that's a question that we never thought of when wolves were reintroduced. It was just a wonderful thing. We're going to have wolves back in the West. And in parts, it has been wonderful. In other areas, it hasn't been. The economic cost to hunting in the West has been very, very large as a result of the diminution of the elk population. But now we have actually an increased human animal conflict as a result of wolves. And it certainly is wonderful at night to on occasion hear a wolf howl in the West, but there are consequences to that. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show. I hope you're enjoying it. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Winter is here and it's always tough on the road, but when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest-lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all-steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And if you're just joining me, welcome. And if you've been with us, hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to move from what I was talking about with haystacks and fences in the West to another thing that's come up through the advent, or if you will, growth of conservation lands on private lands. Through the Wetland Reserve Program, the Conservation Reserve Program, or individuals just wanting simply to set aside areas for wildlife, is that almost every state and every county has a law dating back to settlement about the controlling of weeds. In Illinois, we have noxious weed laws. Throughout America, we have noxious weed laws. And I know a lot of you listening live in rural America and are involved in agriculture, and you understand this well. But for the first time, perhaps, we have a conflict that is occurring between those who want to manage for wildlife and those who want to manage for growing crops to feed their families and feed America. And that is that a lot of weeds that are considered noxious weeds by the U.S. Department of Agriculture are actually very helpful for wildlife. Some of them are invasive. Some of them were naturally occurring. When you're growing now large areas of habitat, whether you're the state of Illinois with our state parks or wildlife management areas, or you're a private individual with Conservation Reserve Program lands or Wetland Reserve Program lands, or you've just set aside some acreage for wildlife, you are going to have what are considered to be noxious weeds, which, according to the law of virtually every single state, you have to remove. And you have to remove them at your own cost. And if you don't remove them, then the county agents from the Department of Agriculture will come in, and they will remove them for you, and they will give you a bill. But what's happening now is a number of individuals are saying, wait a minute, I'm managing my property for wildlife, deer hunting, duck hunting, upland bird hunting, and it is my income. I sell the hunting rights, I lease my land, I have outfitters, I run a guide service. This is my way of making money on my land. You can't come in and tell me that I can't manage my property for my benefit and make me remove plants and trees that are not beneficial to my neighbor but that are beneficial to me, because after all, my neighbor who is putting pesticides on his crops, he's doing things that are not beneficial to me but are beneficial to him. This is likely to end up in the Supreme Court. And it's beginning to percolate its way across America. And it's an incredibly interesting discussion. One of the two all-time noxious weeds now that they want to get rid of, and both of which are invasive. One is Russian olive trees. We don't have them in the Midwest. We have autumn olive in the Midwest. And if you've driven around southern Illinois, you've seen an absolute explosion of autumn olive trees. They have little tiny seeds, but they are nothing compared to the wildlife value of a Russian olive, which has taken over much of the western United States. It is the number one habitat food for all forms of native wildlife, for birds as well as for deer. Turkeys, they love it. But it's an invasive tree. It's called Russian olive because it's where it came from. But it is a fabulous food source for wildlife, and it also provides cover, which enables birds to get out of the way of predator birds and predator animals. The other one, which actually at one point was advocated being planted, none other than by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, is multiflora. Multiflora, we have miles and miles and miles and thousands of acres of multiflora in Illinois alone. It was put in the 40s and 50s at the Soil Conservation Service's behest to stop erosion, wind erosion, soil erosion. Well, it took off. It did absolutely fabulous, and it was great cover for birds. Well, now it's exploded, and any place that's unmanaged in Illinois is going to end up with multiflora. It's also a weed that's supposed to be gotten rid of, but it is a terrific value for wildlife. So individuals in Illinois who have lots of multiflora or autumn olives are being forced to remove them so that they can benefit a neighboring landowner who doesn't want them. But it's also taking away from the idea of having highly productive wildlife habitat, in some cases taking away the ability of people to earn monetary return because they are not able then to have the kind of hunting and land habitat management they want. So no one in the 1860s through the 1930s would have ever thought about these kind of conflicts coming. But they're here, and much like wolves in the West driving elk into landowners' yards, where now they've got problems with elk eating their winter hay for their agriculture, throughout America we have increasing problems with the lands that have been set aside for wildlife management, conflicting with agriculture and agriculture's need to have clean fields. I don't know where this is going to end up. Private property rights are certainly going to be at the heart of this. Why can't I do on my property what I want versus being mandated to do on my property what somebody else wants me to do? This will be one of those things where the only people who make money are the lawyers, and wildlife will continue to be compromised. And I don't know that there's going to be an easy result. There's certainly one of the issues that's coming our way that we would have never anticipated. Next week, I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the West with what is arguably the biggest decision facing the future of dams in the West. There's been a federal court ruling ordering the Army Corps of Engineers and the Bureau of Reclamation to come up with a new species management plan to show that they are not further harming salmon migrations in the West. It's going to be a near impossibility for them to do that, although there's certainly some technological things that are coming online that are really, really interesting, which could save and restore the Pacific salmon runs to their levels that were at least 40 and 50 years ago versus headed towards extinction where they're headed now. So there's a lot going in the conservation world. But again, tonight, maybe someone will stand up in that town hall meeting and ask the candidates to explain their views on the future of conservation, hunting, and fishing in America. It'd be a wonderful thing if it happened. I know we'd all be listening. And thank you very much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed the show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.